Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 6th, and let the record reflect it is 1:31 p.m. I'm slacking. It's a minute late. Today we have present Representative Johnson, Representative Groh, Representative Eastman, Representative Gray, Vice Chair Allard, Representative Carpenter is present as well, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a full committee today. I'm so excited. And a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Sophia Tenney with House Records and Doug Bridges with the Juneau LAO. Thank you so much for your work. On today's agenda, the committee will bring back House Bill 66, Controlled Substances, from the governor as presented by the Criminal Division of the Department of Law in its fourth hearing. We will hear House Bill 82, Selection and Review of Judges, by Representative Rauscher in its first hearing. It is my intent to hear House Bill 82 no later than 2:30 today. We do have five amendments for House Bill 66 that I would like us to consider and move on and move on the bill itself. So that means we need to be clicking right along and confine our questions to actual questions. We will have an opportunity for comments on the legislation prior to moving the bill, so please refrain comments for that time. We will now take up House Bill 66, and I would like to welcome to the table Department of Law Criminal Division Director Mr. John Skidmore as we go through the amendments. Does the bill sponsor have any comments prior to us considering amendments?
No.
Okay. I trust that everyone has the amendments before them. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one. And add black department to address this if they would.
Okay. Madam Chair, I have an amendment to the amendment.
I will object because I have not seen the amendment to the amendment.
Me neither.
I don't know what it's about.
Brief at ease.
I have the amendment.
On the record, Representative Gray, would you like to speak to your amendment to the amendment 8.7?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I am in support of Amendment 1. I had two concerns that my amendment was to address. The first, if you look at line 17, I've added Schedule 4A. Schedule 4A are drugs that include Ativan and Xanax. It also includes ketamine. So one of the my interpretation of the amendment was this was to kind of prevent date rape drugs from being used. Since ketamine in particular can be used as a date rape drug, I wanted to make sure that it was included. The second thing is that I had my own concerns about medical personnel, caregivers, guardians, who might, through the very best of intents, deliver a substance to someone that could result in death. I didn't want them to be charged with second-degree murder. That was the purpose of my amendment. And there were some other changes that Ledge Legal made that they're online and they could speak to. They moved a section towards the end, but that was a change that Ledge Legal made.
Vice Chair Allen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I don't know if I can direct a question to the sponsor, or maybe I can just go directly to Mr. Skidmore. Thank you. Mr. Skidmore, I do understand that the sponsor for this amendment is talking about a date rape drug and other classes in here that the sponsor recommends. Can you give us your professional opinion on that? And I would also like to find out your take, because I have a little bit of a concern just saying anybody that accidentally gave something to somebody under that assumption, I don't know if they were trying to murder the person or not. So I don't want to just arbitrarily give everybody you gave them the drug, it's your mom or your dad, so you're not going to get charged. Could you talk to that a little bit, please?
For the record, this is John Skidmore, the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Alaska Department of Law. As I understand where we are procedurally at the moment. We've moved amendment number one, which is A.2, and then we have Representative Gray, who's moving to make an amendment to that, which is A.7. And then we have the question that's been posed to me. And let me start by talking about what amendment number one does, outline the differences that I see between A.2, which is amendment one, and A.7, which I don't know if it helps you all, but for my clarity, I'm going to refer to as A1A, just so that we keep the two separate and we know what we're talking about.
Madam Chair, may I really quick, please?
Follow up?
Yes. I apologize. It's just this is the first time I saw it, so I do have some questions. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So let me start by talking about Amendment 1, which is A.2. And what this particular amendment is doing is it is adding a new subsection to misconduct involving controlled substances in the first degree. It is taking conduct that is already illegal, providing substances to somebody else when you are not authorized to do so, i.e. a medical provider, and it is elevating that criminal conduct from a Class A felony to an unclassified felony under the circumstances that you find on Amendment 1, A.2, lines 17 through 21 on page 1. Specifically, it's saying that if the individual is delivering a Schedule 1A, 2A, or 3A controlled substances, and they're delivering it to someone that falls into one of the three following subsets. Subset 1 on line 19 is someone that is mentally incapable. The second is a person that is incapacitated. Or 3, someone that is unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered. Now, for clarity, the terms mentally incapable and incapacitated are actually terms that are found elsewhere in statute. And so if you go to page 2 of that same amendment, amendment number 1, A.2, you find down on lines 11 and 12 of page 2, incapacity and mentally incapable, they both refer back to 1141-470. Those are actually subsections in sexual assault. But the definitions for incapable is someone that is temporarily incapable of appraising the nature of one's own conduct or physically unable to express a willingness to act. And the mentally incapable is also found in the same definition section of 1141-470, and that one refers to someone suffering from a mental disease or defect that renders the person incapable of understanding the nature or consequences of the person's conduct, including the potential of harm to that person. The idea being here is that you have an individual who is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that they are being given a controlled substance. And when they are provided one of the controlled substances in the schedules that are listed, that elevates the crime in this circumstance to a misconduct involving a controlled substance in the first degree instead of being in the second degree or in the third degree. And so it's really trying to get at those people that aren't able to make those decisions for themselves. That's what Amendment number one does. And then you have Amendment 1A, which is A.7, and the difference between Amendment 1 and Amendment 1A is that 1A also adds Schedule 4A substances, and you heard Representative Gray speak as to why he wants to include 4A within those categories. And then the second thing it does is on lines 19, the end of line 19, and then lines 20 and 21 on A.7, where it says, unless the person delivering the substance is acting in the scope of the person's duty as a licensed medical professional, caregiver, or guardian of the person. So that's the real difference between the two. As to the question from Representative Allard about whether or not I believe there are drugs in 4A that can be used for purposes of attempting to sexually assault someone, it's possible. I agree with Representative Gray about the drugs that are located in Schedule 4. I agree about the way in which they could potentially be used. I don't have statistics on the numbers or percentages in which we see those types of drugs used for sexual assault, so I can't offer an opinion on that. Adding 4A is fairly straightforward. You're just adding another set of scheduled drugs that you're saying should not be given to someone who's mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware that the controlled substance is being delivered. That's really the substance of the difference for that particular provision. In terms of the unless the person delivering the substance is acting in the scope of the person's duties as a licensed medical professional, these may not be statutes that you all are readily familiar with, and so I want to refer you under either 1A or 1, either whichever one you look at. If you look at the beginning of misconduct involving the controlled substance in the first degree, the language says, and I'm looking on line 8 of which either amendment you decide to look at, except as authorized in AS 1730. The significance of that is that Title 17, Chapter 30 is the section of state statutes that authorize medical professionals, and there's a definition for medical professionals, to possess or prescribe or dispense or administer these types of controlled substances to patients. It's what makes it not illegal for a doctor with a DEA license, because that's what the statutes talk about, having to be registered under the federal statutes to be able to do those sorts of things. And so as to Amendment 1A, at the end of line 19 and 20, unless the person is delivering the substance is acting in the scope of the person's duty as a licensed medical professional, I would tell you I believe is superfluous. It's not needed given 1730. However, when you get to the caregiver or guardian of the person, the challenges with that language is that caregiver is not in and of itself defined. There is a concept of a caregiver found in Alaska Statute 1737070, where it talks about a primary caregiver. But that particular statute's talking about medical marijuana, and it specifically talks about caregivers for marijuana. What we do not have in our statutes, and this, quite frankly, may be something that's lacking, is anything that addresses the issue of a parent giving a controlled substance to their child when it's prescribed, or a adult child giving a controlled substance to a aging parent who has been prescribed those medications. We don't have anything in our statutes that expressly addresses those issues. Have we ever prosecuted a case for any of those things? The answer is no, but we don't have anything there. So not having caregiver defined is problematic. And then guardian of the person is also problematic. Not having those things defined makes it difficult to understand exactly what would be happening there. So I hope that I've answered Representative Allard's questions, and I've given you an overview of the amendments.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, to the best of your knowledge, are the definition of caregiver and guardian, are the, in order to achieve that status, are you required to receive a DEA license to prescribe drugs? And then a follow-up with that answer to that question.
Through the chair to Representative Carpenter, the DEA is not going to give licenses to a caregiver or to a guardian. DEA licenses are handed to people that are trained medically, because the substances we're dealing with are controlled because they are dangerous. And you would not, the DEA, I don't think, is going to license individuals that haven't been through that type of educational training.
Follow up.
Thank you. And I think we would both agree with that. However, this might conflict with the except as 1730, because that's specifically for medical professionals. We would be adding to the list caregiver and guardians who don't have DEA licenses, but they would be an exception to be able to give Schedule 1A, 2A, 3A, or 4A with this amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, by adding caregiver and guardian of the person when those are undefined or somewhat amorphous, and what this would be doing is saying they could not be prosecuted under this subsection for providing those to someone that's mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware. We don't know who those people necessarily are. And so by enacting a state statute that would have that within it, it would create challenges in terms of who can or can't then be providing controlled substances to someone in one of those conditions.
And a follow-up, then I would just ask the maker of the amendment to help me understand under what conditions would a caregiver or a guardian be giving these drugs, and if they're not licensed, how would that work? What's the reasoning behind adding this?
Yes, and I have discussed this with Mr. Skidmore. Thank you. Sorry. Through the chair, I apologize. My hypothetical was if someone was on hospice care, and that patient's wife was administering morphine or giving the pain medication to the person towards end of life. And my fear would be that perhaps an estranged stepdaughter might use a statute like this to come after her stepmother and say, you know, my stepmother killed my dad, or, you know, gave him these controlled medications. And we know that he was unaware that this was happening. He didn't consent to it. And that was my fear. I wanted to protect somebody, like in that particular case, a wife giving a controlled substance to her husband who was on hospice care.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Eller.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, in law, I don't want to use me as an example, I'll jinx myself. If somebody is dying of some sort of horrible disease and their life is going to be ending, mm-hmm. can a caregiver give a morphine to that spouse? I thought it had to be done by like a nurse or a hospice care provider.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, in state statute currently, there is no authorization for a caregiver or a guardian to provide a controlled substance to somebody else. 1730, AS 1730, I think it's 080, I think, is the one that talks about administering drugs. And it does say it is legal for someone to administer drugs when they are properly licensed to do so. It does not provide provisions for individuals that are not licensed to do so.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson, do you consider this a friendly amendment?
If I might ask a question, Madam Chair. What's your feeling on adding the 4A?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, 4A, I don't think creates any sort of drafting problems, and I agree with Representative Gray that there are drugs within that could be used for sexual assault.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Skidmore. Mr. Skidmore, have you ever, as a prosecutor, represented a case where someone was poisoned to the point of death after receiving a date rape drug?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I have not seen someone poisoned to the point of death after a date rape drug.
Okay, thank you.
Are we ready for the
to address
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. To address whether I think this is a friendly, I think it's partially friendly, but I have great concerns about adding the caregiver and guardian without some kind of definition, and that concerns me. So at this point, you know, I'm half supportive because I like the other part, but not having those definitions concern me. So I would not consider this necessarily friendly.
Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, if you're so inclined, I'd move to separate the question, divide the question, and list 4A as the first question, and adding unless the person delivering the substance is acting in the scope of the person's duties as a licensed medical professional, caregiver, or guardian of the person as the second question.
Is there an objection?
I have a point of information.
What are we doing?
Would that be bifurcating those two?
Yes.
Okay.
So if I may, the motion that I made was so that we would be able to vote on separating the two questions and vote separately on those two questions. It would still require a vote, two votes.
Representative Carpenter, there is a page 2 to this amendment.
So, Madam Chair, the changes on page 2, lines 11 and 12 would be included in the first vote with Schedule 4A drugs. And if you want me to remove the or restate the motion, I will.
Representative Carpenter, would you restate the motion? And then I believe we, Mr. Skidmore would like to speak to it. So we will need an objection after the motion has been stated. Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, I move to divide the question such that there are two votes, one for the Schedule 4A addition and the lines 11 and 12 on page 2, incapacitated and mentally incapable definitions. And the second question be the portion of lines 19 through 21 that say, unless the person delivering the substance is acting in the scope of the person's duties as a licensed medical professional caregiver or guardian of the person.
Object.
Mr. Skidmore, would you speak to this motion?
To the chair, procedurally, I think where you are is that you have the amendment in front of you. You have amendments to the amendment, and I believe that Representative Carpenter has appropriately tried to divide the 4A from the other language on page 1. The language on page 2 is identical between both amendments. So I don't think you've reached the question of whether you're adopting the overall amendment. You just have to figure out, are the amendments to the amendment going to be included before you get to the ultimate vote on the original amendment? I hope that helps.
Representative Carpenter.
The effect of my motion is to give us the opportunity to solely add 4A to amendment number 1.
At ease.
So we're.
Can I have will the recorder please tally, call the vote?
No, I have a comment first, please.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. You know, I'm looking at just the question of adding 4A. I think that's the first vote, correct? And on that, I know the bill itself, I think in my mind, is very expansive in how it's reclassifying the second degree murder charge. And I'm looking particularly at one of the areas in the bill which we have tried to narrow the scope somewhat, maybe not enough, but somewhat, is, you know, on page 2, line 22 of the bill, where it says, you know, as a direct result of ingestion. I think the intent there is to make it so that it is as direct as possible. We're excluding indirect deaths after someone's ingested one of these substances. And my question to Mr. Skidmore earlier about date rate drugs and you know, poisoning is, because I like him, I'm not familiar with those types of cases where someone has received a date rape jug and then as a direct result of ingestion dies. Now, you know, maybe indirect, maybe there's a murder afterwards or there's an assault and someone dies of exposure afterwards. I understand, but these are indirect references, which I think we've specifically precluded or trying to preclude with the language of the bill on page 2. And I think that that's important because I think if we delve into the indirect territory, there's just a whole lot of scenarios that we would need to consider and it might be problematic. So I'm currently uncomfortable with adding 4A to the list, particularly as it might relate to things like date rape drugs, which in my experience don't generally result in murder. And I'm not aware of them ever resulting directly in murder.
Representative Eastman, this is A.7 in Section 2 that is amending to talk about misconduct involving a controlled substance. I believe this amendment only changes that particular area of statute.
Thank you.
Representative Groh.
I apologize. Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I'd like to ask Mr. Skidmore one question about Schedule 4 aides, since it's come up and we're thinking of adding it. And I up front say this, I'm not as familiar with medicine as Representative Gray. I'm particularly interested in a medication called trazodone, which I'm just personally aware a number of people take. Is it requires a prescription? Is it in Schedule 4A or any of the other schedules? And I'm asking this because I don't know. I'd like Mr. Skidmore, Ms. Person of Grade, to address this, please.
Through the Chair, Representative Groh, I don't know that medication off the top of my head, and it would take me a number of minutes to go through the schedule to try and find it. So I don't know the answer without looking.
Madam Chair, I would note that Person of Grade seems to, does know a lot about medicine and seems to indicate that it's not.
Is this pertinent to us?
I just want to make sure that, because we're trying to add an additional penalty for Schedule 4A, that this medication that I know people who take it, they, I wanted to be concerned to ask its status. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Just to follow up that, I think it might be important for the record to clarify. So if we were to add 4A in this Amendment 1 or the first portion of Amendment 1, we are moving to an unclassified felony if we do so, and where is it currently that we're moving from? That's the part that I'm a little bit confused about.
We are on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 1 that has been bifurcated to two separate sections. And this is specifically addressing Section 2, misconduct involving a controlled substance. Are we on the same page, Representative Eastman?
Yes, that's actually not my question. My question is, by adding 4A, it becomes an unclassified felony. And I'm just wanting to know, if we don't add 4A, what is it?
Mr. Skidmore.
Through the Chair, Representative Eastman, it's misconduct involving controlled substance in the third degree, and it would be moving to an unclassified for Schedule 4.
And can you remind us, what is the designation? What type of felony is it currently that we're moving away from?
Yes, it is a Class B felony that would be moving to an unclassified felony when the drugs are provided to somebody that is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware.
Thank you very much.
Would the recorder please call the vote on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 1, the first portion of the bifurcation?
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative
Groh. Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Chair Bam.
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
And with 6 yeas and 1 nay, the Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 1, the first bifurcation, passes. Would the recorder please call the vote on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 1, the second portion of the bifurcation?
Representative Allard.
Yeah, no.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative Groh.
Yes.
Chair Bam.
No. With 2 yeas and 5 nays, the amendment fails. So we are now back to Amendment Number 1 as amended. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move Amendment Number 1 as amended, and I'd ask the department to explain it.
Mr. Skidmore.
So this is what I had said earlier. You are taking the delivery of a Schedule 1A, 2A, 3A, and now 4A, being providing it to somebody that is mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware, and it's making it an unclassified felony is what this would be doing. I can tell you that that is something that is elevating the conduct. It's similar to what we do in sexual assault statutes, that if you take conduct that is targeted to somebody that is not unaware or incapacitated, making them unaware or incapacitated sort of raises that level of what's going on with those things. So this would be following in a similar suit for the controlled substances.
I guess for the record, in order to discuss this, someone needs to object for purposes of discussion, and I will do so.
Don't have to.
That's true. You don't.
I think that's pretty self-explanatory. You know, we're basically taking people that aren't able to take care of themselves and elevating it to a higher class. And so, I encourage everyone to vote yes.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think the devil's in the details here. We heard that what the word deliver is going to be interpreted as in our previous hearing. We're not even talking about someone actually ingesting or receiving controlled substance. Basically, we heard earlier that deliver just means to give it to someone. How often are you going to be in a situation where you are handing a box to someone and the person receiving the box with the controlled substance in it is unaware that controlled substance is being delivered? I imagine that could happen in any number of different scenarios and circumstances. I'm not, on that definition of deliver, I'm not prepared to add all of these different controlled substances to this, you know, what amounts to an unclassified felony, which is, I do believe that's the highest felony we have in this state, along with first-degree murder.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just wanted some clarification through the Deputy Attorney General that because an unclassified felony is a big deal, that it is clear in law that this won't be used to punish parents or guardians or folks who are taking care of their loved one while administering this type of medication.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, in my 25 years of prosecution, I don't think I can recall a referral in which we had a loved one that was administering these types of drugs to somebody else that we prosecuted for a drug crime. As I indicated earlier, I don't believe there's something in statute that expressly protects that, but from our standpoint, that's not what the drug laws are designed to do, and we have not filed those charges, nor do I see a time in which we would be.
I'd like to welcome Representative Ruffridge to the committee room and former Senator Scott Ogan is for joining us as well. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Skidmore, is assisted suicide legal or illegal in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I would actually need to look that up. I don't know off the top of my head.
Follow up. And so if you are delivering a controlled substance for the purpose of assisting someone in committing suicide, as you were just talking about earlier, is that the type of case that you haven't seen and that you were saying you have never prosecuted? And if so, I'm wondering, are just people not committing assisted suicide in the state, or you just haven't chosen to prosecute? I would like some clarity, please.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, what I was indicating is that I have not seen referrals for that. I have not seen a referral for an assisted suicide. That would be in dealing with a death. This particular provision, however, this amendment is not talking about causing a death. This amendment is talking about simply prosecuting somebody for delivering controlled substances to another person. It doesn't involve the resulting in death. That's not what this amendment is doing. So I view it as separate, and I'll have to look up whether or not assisted suicide is something that's within the statutes or not. I don't know the answer.
Follow up. And so if this delivery of that substance did result in death, is there something in the law that would preclude you from prosecuting that case based on this statute, if it passes, of course?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, you're now getting to the manslaughter provision, which is what the underlying bill deals with, not the amendment. And the answer to that is, I don't believe there's anything that would prevent us from prosecuting. However, again, I would need to look up and make sure there's not some other protection for an assisted suicide, as it's colloquially called. I would need to verify there's not a statute somewhere else that protects that.
Certainly. Thank you very much.
Representative Carpenter, do you maintain your objection?
I do, and I have a question for the maker of the amendment.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, what is the thinking behind including someone who's unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered with someone who is incapacitated or mentally incapable? As we've heard during this discussion, someone might be just receiving a package and unaware. And how is that related to being incapacitated or mentally incapable?
I'm going to ask Mr. Skidmore to answer that.
Okay.
I apologize. Restate the question for me.
So I'm looking at the list on starting at line 19 through 21.
Yes.
And I understand mentally incapable and incapacitated as a logical status of a human. Mm-hmm. And then I see unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered. Mm-hmm. And as we've discussed, that may just be somebody that receives a package, a box, or a bag that has something in it, but not necessarily mentally incapable or incapacitated. So would the effect of having, including C in this conversation or in this legislation here, mean that somebody that is not mentally incapable, scratch that, somebody that is mentally capable and not incapacitated would also potentially be charged with this if they took the package?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I understand your question. Give me just a moment to think that through.
Representative Eastman.
Follow up through the chair. I think the scenario you just laid out would only be triggered once they in turn hand it off to somebody else. But at that point, they would have to know that there was a controlled substance in it. Because I think that on this particular provision, I think there is still that, you know, willfulness or mens rea.
Mr. Skidmore.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I want to make sure that I'm tracking. Are you asking me about the person receiving the package or the person delivering the package to them?
Delivers.
Okay. So in that circumstance, if the person who is delivering the package knows that it's a controlled substance and is handing it to someone who is unaware that it's a controlled substance, that person, under this reading of the statute, would be guilty of this crime for delivering it to that person. The challenge may be delivers versus administers. Deliver, as we've already talked about, is handing it to somebody else. Administer is causing them to ingest or inhale or take it into their system in some capacity. So the law defines those two things differently.
And a follow-up, if I can.
Follow-up.
So just to recap, the amendment here is dealing with the crime of misconduct involving a controlled substance in the first degree. And it is specifically saying somebody is going to be guilty of that if they deliver any amount of Schedule 1, 2, 3, or 4A substance to a person who is unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered, which may mean they're taking possession of a bag with material in it and they're unaware. So the person who gave the bag to somebody who's unaware that it's a drug is going to be guilty of this unclassified felony.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Allard.
Yes, through the chair. Before I ask Mr. Skidmore the question, could you ask Mr. Carpenter if you can just repeat what you just said?
Representative Carpenter.
Through the chair to Representative Allard. We're talking about a person will be guilty of committing the crime of misconduct involving a controlled substance in the first degree, if that person delivers any amount of Schedule 1, 2, 3, or 4A substance to a person who is unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered upon receipt.
Okay. Through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, did we already determine that if the person delivering the substance is aware, will be charged, but what if the person delivering is unaware, but the receiver is aware?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, the person receiving the drugs is not guilty of the delivery. They could be guilty of possession, and depending upon the quantity of the possession, you could get to a delivery with the intent to distribute, which are other aspects of misconduct involving controlled substances. But the person who is unaware that they are handing the controlled substances to somebody else has not committed a crime if they don't know they're handing that person controlled substances. And that applies not just for the amendment in front of you, but for all of the drug statutes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, my understanding of unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered, and this might be a question for the author of the amendment, but was that this would be about putting drugs in someone's drink, and then that person would drink it and not know that they've been given this substance in their drink. I just wanted clarification because the packages thing has thrown me off a little bit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's one of the reasons there's others that have come up in individual cases, but that's primarily not being aware.
Representative Carpenter, do you maintain your objection?
I do not.
Representative Eastman.
Yes, I maintain my objection, and I would like to propose an amendment to the amended amendment that would consist of changing one word. That would consist of changing the word delivers to the word administers. That way we can be completely out of the packages situation, back where the original intent, at least for some, was if you are actually putting a substance into someone's body, then I think that's mostly what the concern is. And I'd like to keep it that way.
Vice Chair Allard, is there an objection?
I object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes. I would like to ask through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, the legal difference in definition of the word administered and delivery when it is used in the context of what we're using it in. Please.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I would direct the subcommittee to Alaska Statute 1171-900, which is the definition section for misconduct involving controlled substances. Administer under subsection 1 means the direct application of a controlled substance, whether by injection, inhalation, ingestion, or any other means into the body of a patient or research subject by a practitioner or in the practitioner's presence or by the practitioner's authorized agent. Or the patient or research subject at the direction or in the presence of the practitioner. In other words, administer, while I get that it would get to the conduct that Representative Eastman wants to talk about of causing the person to inject, inhale, ingest, or by any other means put it into the body, administer in the definitions talks about a practitioner doing this with a patient or a research subject. And so I don't think it would get to the conduct that I heard the maker of the amendment trying to address, which is one citizen to another citizen, because the practitioners here are those people registered for DEA. Delivery, on the other hand, defined under subsection 7 of the same statute, 1171-900, means the actual, constructive, or attempted transfer from one person to another of a controlled substance, whether or not there's an agency relationship. Deliver in that sense is a broader concept than the conduct in administer, because it can be simply handing it to somebody else or it can be putting in their drink and causing them to drink it. Both would be covered by the term deliver. And so deliver gets to the original intent of the maker of the amendment, administer would have, because of the way the law defines administer, would have problems. I get that it would narrow it in terms of the conduct, but it would also narrow it in terms of who can administer and who can't.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up. So it actually gives it a legal different definition.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I appreciate the definition there of that particular word in that particular statute. I would like to withdraw my previous motion and replace it with causes a person to ingest. Instead of using the word delivers, we would say causes a person to ingest.
Object for purpose of discussion.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, you know where I'm going to go. Could you please give me the legal definition of, I want to repeat what Representative Eastman said.
Causing someone to ingest?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair, for that leeway.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, causing someone to ingest. I don't see ingestion defined within the statutes themselves, so I'd have to go to the dictionary definition. And when I think of ingesting, I tend to think of taking that through the mouth. I don't know that that's going to include injection or inhalation. Ingestion, to me, is going to go through the digestive system. And so it would cover some of the conduct of causing, like pour it in a drink and someone drinks it, that would probably be ingestion. But for the person who takes a syringe and puts it in somebody else's arm and injects it, it would not cover that conduct.
Follow up. The term, in ingest, I get it, but what about causing? Because to cause someone, is that a sense of almost forcing them? I know. We're getting in the weeds. I just want to make sure we get this right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, the term causes, there would have to be something they're doing that causes that person to ingest it. It's a broader term. Do you have to force them to know? But it would be the way in which it was argued. I think it's the sort of thing that would be subject to interpretation. We'd get into it in the trials and how we wanted to litigate it. But
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I would just direct the committee's attention to, we actually do have a definition of ingestion in the bill already, where it says ingestion mean voluntary or involuntary taking substance into the body in any manner. And that, of course, is the meaning by which I take it. I think that definition of ingestion should be applied not just to the one location where it's at in the bill currently, but to each instance of the word ingestion in the bill, which would include my amendment.
Vice Chair Allard.
Yeah, just really quick. Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Skidmore, by using digestion and causing or caused digest, doesn't that give a different meaning when you use the two words together legally?
I'm sorry, give me just one moment. Yes. I want to read what Representative Eastman was just referring to.
Page 2, line 23.
I'm with you. Through the chair to Representative Allard, when I'm looking at line 24 on page 2, ingestion means the voluntary or involuntary taking of a substance into the body in any manner, causing a person to do that when they are voluntarily or involuntarily, I think would be fairly broad and would cover a large range of conduct. And in this case, ingestion, taking it into the body, would provide a definition beyond that dictionary definition that I was thinking of. So I believe Representative Eastman is correct. It would now include injections and inhalation as well.
Follow up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Eastman.
Representative Johnson, do you consider this a friendly amendment to amendment number 1?
Through the chair, I do.
Representative Gray.
Yes, just for clarity, are we talking about changing line 17? So it would say, 4 would read causes to ingest any amount of a Schedule 2A, 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A controlled substance. So it would actually be changing line 17. So we're not changing line 21. We're changing line 17.
Representative Eastman.
I'm specifically focused on line 17. But if I would want to give the drafters the ability to make the language uniform. And I think the delivery that I'm talking about is not the physical transfer of a possession. It is the administration. But since administration's already been defined elsewhere, rather than changing that, we're just focusing specifically on giving to another person in a, such a way that it gets into their body. That's my intent.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Skidmore.
I'm sorry. When we do this quickly on the fly, I get a little cautious. The challenge with the definition that Representative Eastman has referred to, it says in this paragraph, ingestion means. That paragraph is found in the murder statutes. It's not going to be found in the misconduct involving controlled substance statutes. So you have to take that language and you would have to move it to the misconduct involving controlled substances statute as well. Not saying it can't be done. I just want to clarify that's not currently in the amendment in front of you. And Madam Chair, I'm also looking at the time. You're about 5 minutes from when you were hoping to be through five amendments, and we're still on amendment number one.
Thank you for Mr. Skidmore for noting that. We will notify the public and the Representative Rauscher that we will not be getting to House Bill 82 today. But Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Yes, and I specifically worded my motion earlier and my explanation to make sure that we're talking not just in the one paragraph, which is on page two of the bill currently, but that in each instance in this bill where we're talking about, this portion on page one, line 17, that we're specifically talking about the definition of ingestion that is already contained in this bill.
Vice Chair Allard, do you maintain your objection?
I was the objector.
You're going to object to the objector?
I would like to speak to my objection.
My apologies. I recall Vice Chair Allard objecting to Representative Eastman's amendment to amendment number one.
Okay. Well, then I might have objected as well. Sorry. Can I speak?
I'll withdraw my objection.
Regardless, then I will object.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. The statute as it currently lists, is currently written here in the amendment, crime involving a controlled substance uses in part one, delivers any amount of Schedule 1A. In part two, delivers any amount of Schedule 2A or 3A. And then in part four, as written, says delivers any amount, and where we have an amendment to change that to a consumption only. I would like to know from Mr. Skidmore what effect that has on the prosecuting of misconduct involving a controlled substance, if there's any inconsistency here where in law or in case law or anything, we're normally talking about the concept of delivering, and then we're going to separate out in one subsection something that's not delivery, it's something else. It's more refined or more limiting in nature. Does that have an impact?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, because the conduct for delivery of a Schedule 1A, 2A, 3A, or 4A is still criminalized in other misconduct involving controlled substance statutes and other degrees, this one is only focused on this conduct as it relates to mentally incapable, incapacitated, or someone that's unaware. So the impact is not beyond just this subsection. You would be drawing a distinction between delivery versus causing somebody to ingest, as ingest is used in the homicide statute as well. So you would be limiting it to the person would have to be putting this in their system for mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware. It would not cover simply handing it to the other person without saying anything to that person about what they should or shouldn't be doing.
follow up?
With the yeah, it's a challenge with doing these on the fly, right? Because there's a lot here to think about. I'm looking up to A1, where we're talking about delivering an amount of a Schedule 1A controlled substance to someone under 19 years of age. Then the person delivering the substance, and it doesn't say anything about whether that person is unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered. So in this case, does the fact that someone would be unaware that a controlled substance is being handed off in Section 4 have anything to do with the 19-year-old piece? It's not. It's all-encompassing to all people at that point.
Through the chair to Representative Carpenter, subsection 1A is its own subsection within the statute. If we had a scenario, and Section 4A would be its own within the statute, if we had a scenario in which the person receiving the controlled substances was under the age of 19 and also mentally incapable or incapacitated, we could charge them with both subsections. But absent that, what one subsection says does not influence the other subsection in our ability to charge the conduct.
Well, then if I can follow up, Madam Chair, then that would also mean that if you're under 19 per subsection 1 and you also are unaware that a controlled substance is being delivered, you could be charged under both.
Affirmative.
But in this case, with the amendment, only if the person that was below 19 was ingesting it.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. I think I'll maintain my objection.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I was tracking with everything you were saying up until that very last part through the chair to Representative Carpenter. And to be super clear, again, in this particular subsection, this amendment we're dealing with right now, the only reason we're bringing in anything about unawareness is because we're talking about someone who is actually being impacted physically by the controlled substance. And so the fact that, you know, someone's 19 or 18 or 21 and, you know, part of some delivery system is totally separate. I think the reason that we have originally called out mental incapacity and or mental inability is because we're not talking about anyone handing off anything to anyone. Different section. This is the section where we're specifically talking about someone who is having a poison, controlled substance, affect their body, and they're mentally incapable, or they're having a poison affect their body and they're incapacitated, or they're having a poison affect their body and they're unaware that that they have received this controlled substance. So I think from what you were saying earlier that there was still a little bit of confusion over one thing impacting the other thing. This is not having anything to do with anyone being 19, and it's having nothing to do with anyone delivering anything or receiving anything physically. This is only having to do with someone who is ingesting or otherwise taking into their body a controlled substance and under any of these circumstances.
And you need a moment to reference the original bill.
Brief at ease.
Madam Vice Chair Allard. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, we've been going back and forth a lot on this, and this is tough for me. I want your professional opinion. I'm just going to straight up ask you, how do you feel about this amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, not unlike members of the subcommittee, I don't like to do things quickly when it comes to changing the law. I want to think things through. I want to make sure we get things right. In the ideal world, I would have gone and consulted with the four or five people in my department that regularly prosecute drug crimes, as I did prior to this morning coming in to discuss the amendments with you all. We're now changing what the amendments say in ways that I'm processing in my head as we're doing it. I understand the concept of trying to get to ingestion, as Representative Eastman has described. I understand why he wants to do that and why he's focused on that. I also understand that delivery is a broader concept. It's the one that's most typically used in our criminal statutes involving misconduct involving controlled substances. Representative Carpenter has articulated the two subsections found in misconduct involving controlled substance in the first degree, but that same term delivery is used in the second degree, in the third degree, in the fourth degree, in the fifth degree. Delivery is used throughout. That's the concept that both our case law and our prosecutors are most comfortable with. So while I understand that the concept may be slightly broader, if I was on the committee, which to be clear, I am absolutely not, if I was on the committee, then I would go with the delivery. And that's not because I take offense to what Representative Eastman is proposing. I just think that that concept I would need to work through my head longer before I was satisfied about the wording and the way in which it was approached. I would simply go with delivery because that's what's already in law and that's what our case law already talks about. So that's the cleanest, clearest way to go about it.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I'm moving forward with caution. Mm-hmm. Is there any ability that you have, and Madam Chair is going to probably kill me on camera, is it possible to be able to get your lifelines in here to discuss this? I mean, this is a big decision for me. I don't know about the others. I can only, but this is,
Through the chair to Representative Allard, I don't know what those people's availability are. They all are working cases. I don't know if any of them are in court at this moment. And unless they're actually watching this hearing, it's going to take them a while to get up to speed with where we are in the concepts and the processes. They don't have these amendments in front of them. So I'm not telling you that's impossible. I'm just providing a word of caution in terms of what that might look like if it's attempted.
Brief Eddies, please, Madam Chetties.
Chair Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm good.
Representative Carpenter.
I still maintain my objection, and I believe that we're hearing advice that we should not move swiftly on a change here and maybe need some time, more time to reflect. Therefore, I will move to table discussion on House Bill 66 until a later date so that we can get the answers to these questions.
Do we object for the purpose of discussion?
Brief at ease. Representative Carpenter.
I remove my previous motion.
Do you maintain your objection on the original conceptual amendment? Okay. Would the recorder please... Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just wanted a little bit of clarification about Representative Eastman's amendment. And I think that since we're talking about, as we heard from the writer of the amendment, it's about date rape drugs. And so I agree with the ingestion that rather than applying it to the whole bill, we could just apply it to line 17.
That is what the amendment currently does.
Thank you.
And for clarification, it's not just date rape drugs. Would the recorder please take the vote on amendment number 2 to amendment number 1?
Representative Grove. I would like to have amendment. I asked to have Representative Rad give him all the questions. A brief statement, please, Madam Chair.
Representative Eastman, would you restate your conceptual amendment?
Thank you. Yes. So on page 1, line 4 or line 17, of the now amended amendment number one, which is, I'm looking at A.2 specifically. So on page one, line 17, instead of the word delivers, it would be, I think, causes to be ingested was what we were talking about, though I'm not particular on the grammar. But that is my intent, that we're dealing specifically with ingested, and that we would look to page 2, line 22 through 25, where we have already defined what ingestion is. So instead of delivers, causes the ingestion of.
I'm ready to go for it, Madam Chair. Yes.
Let's start over.
I must start over now.
Okay.
Would the recorder please call the vote on amendment number 2 to amendment number 1?
Representative Rowe.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Yes.
Representative Gray.
No.
Chair Vance. No.
2 yeas, 5 nays.
With 2 yeas and 5 nays, amendment number 2 to amendment number 1 fails. So we have amendment number 1 as amended before us. Will the recorder please call the vote?
Yes.
Representative Rowe.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
I don't remember what we're voting on. Okay. I need the question reread before. Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Chair Vance.
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
With a vote of 6 yeas and 1 nay, amendment number 1, as amended, has passed.
Should we stand and...
Representative Johnson.
I reluctantly move amendment number 2.
Back for discussion.
Representative Johnson, would you speak to amendment number 2?
Thank you. Amendment number 2... stiffens a crime on the manufacturer delivery of related to fentanyl. And I have the department also would ask them to help me explain that.
John Skidmore, for the record, what you have in amendment number 2, if this is A.1, if you look on page 2, lines 7 and 8, is the added language. And this is simply saying that the conviction is for the manufacture or deliver related to fentanyl, that you are then subject to a 7 to 11 year penalty as opposed to the 4 to 7. It's what we refer to in the law as special circumstances. There are other Class A felonies that special circumstances apply to. This would be adding fentanyl to that category. Only for the manufacture or delivery of it.
And in staying consistent with the committee, I move to conceptually amendment number two to change the words on page 2, line 8, to delete the word fentanyl and replace it with the words a Schedule 1A substance.
Object for discussion.
This is so that we are consistent with the bill in talking about Schedule 1A substances and not just prescriptively one specific drug. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like the amendment as it reads because we have been talking about fentanyl. We've been calling this a fentanyl bill, and we've been talking about the massive increase in fentanyl-related deaths. And so I think that it actually makes the point of making this bill about what we've been saying it's been about all along, which is fentanyl. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So two things come to mind. First, you know, I really have some heartache over how broad we are using words like delivery. And I think it's gone, you know, way past where the original bill was coming from, was, you know, dealing with deaths and dealing with fentanyl, all these sorts of things. And so I appreciate that we're calling out fentanyl specifically to the previous speaker. But I look at 1A, I see you've got Oxy there, and now we're basically opening it up to someone handing someone any amount of Oxy. And how often does that happen in society between any number of people we would normally consider law-abiding, not murdering, not drug, you know, dealing types of people? And that's a concern, because now we're taking conduct, which I think most Alaskans might say, yeah, it's not really deserving of 10 or more years in prison. So that's my concern.
Vice Chair Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, thank you. Just disregard. Thank
Representative
you.
Johnson.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, we are dealing with fentanyl. There are a lot of things we could throw into this. It is a dangerous, deadly drug, and I don't mind singling it out. I want to single it out. I want to send a message that fentanyl particularly is the dangerous, deadly drug we're dealing with. So much to my chagrins, I'm going to oppose the amendment.
I'm sorry.
Representative Carpenter.
Which amendment are you opposing?
Conceptual amendment.
I'm lost.
Okay.
The amendment, Madam Chair, the amendment that adds all the Schedule 4As to fentanyl.
Thank you.
That summarizes it, I think.
Well, with that, I will withdraw my conceptual amendment to amendment number 2. So amendment number 2 is before us. Would the recorder please, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I'm looking at related to fentanyl, and that seems somewhat ambiguous. I'd like to hear from Mr. Skidmore what is related to fentanyl going to be, unless we have a drafter on the line who can explain it. Instead of saying delivery of fentanyl, why is it delivery related to fentanyl? Does that mean if you're delivering a precursor, that now that is, you know, encompassed in this? I just would like some specificity, unless related to fentanyl is defined somewhere, in which case I'd love that definition.
Representative Eastman, who was you asking the question specifically?
Well, if there's a drafter on the line, that would be my first person to go to. If not, then we've got Mr. Skidmore here. Maybe he has the answer.
We do not have a drafter online, Mr. Skidmore.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I don't know why the drafter chose the words related to. It's for the conviction, is for manufacturing or delivery. Related to fentanyl, I read that simply as they're talking about fentanyl, because it's specifying under Alaska Statute 1171.021, subsection A1, which is the statute that criminalizes the delivery of a Schedule 1A substance. And I think they just chose related to fentanyl because that's how they chose to draft, getting to specifically fentanyl as opposed to all Schedule 1A drugs.
Follow up?
All right. So under that understanding, would there be any legal definition or difference between delivery of fentanyl and the current language delivery related to fentanyl? Would those be legally the same?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I would tell you I would read those the same. I don't know if everyone else is going to agree with me on that, but when I read them, that's the way I look at it, is those are the same things.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman, do you maintain your objection?
I do. And I would like to substitute that definition if they are, in fact, legally the same, so it's more precise. And we know exactly what we're talking about here and what we're about to vote on. So in replacing related to fentanyl with of fentanyl.
Vice Chair Ellen.
Thank you.
Do you have an objection?
Object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
I would. Can I go through Mr. Skidmore to do that?
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair. Mr. Skidmore, when I look at fentanyl related, it makes it when you had spoke earlier in regards to sometimes you can, not often, but fentanyl could be laced in marijuana. That's fentanyl related, correct?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes, that would be related to fentanyl.
If we strike out related, through the chair, Mr. Skidmore, if we strike out related, then that could possibly mean if there's marijuana laced with fentanyl, that can that person still be committed or charged with that crime?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, in order for us to charge someone with that crime, we would have to show that they knew fentanyl was mixed into it when they delivered it.
Thank you. Follow-up, please, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Through the chair. Mr. Skidmore, by striking related, what is it going to cause as far as a change of the law statute? Is it going to snowball? Is it going to roll and affect other things in this particular bill? Please.
I want to make sure that I'm, if you strike related to, what's the snowball effect? Or yes. If you have related to, what's the snowball effect?
Maybe both. I'm struggling with taking the word related out. And I'm trying to find out how that will impact this particular. Help me out here, Mr. Skidmore.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, I hesitate to utter these words, but it seems to be a meaning without a difference to me. I understand the specificity with which Representative Eastman is trying to get to. I think they mean the same thing. Either way the committee goes, I don't think it's going to change how the law is practiced and what we charge people with and who's going to be subject to the 7 to 11. I think it's going to be the same either way.
Follow up, please.
What?
Thank you. So basically what I just heard you say is that the amendment's not needed. Thank you. Okay.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I know vagueness is something we try to avoid. We do have courts that strike down crimes and convictions based on vagueness. So in my view that the amendment will remove some of the ambiguity and vagueness and can only help prosecutions.
Is the objection maintained?
Yeah.
Would the recorder please call the vote? On amendment, conceptual amendment number 2 to amendment number 2.
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative Rowe.
Yes.
Representative Allen.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
No.
Chair Vance.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
With the vote of 3 yeas and 4 nays on conceptual amendment number 1 for clarification to amendment number 2, it fails. So we have amendment number 2 before us. Would the recorder please call the vote?
8. Madam Chair, may I? Sorry, but before you do that, can you just read the question so I understand what we're re-voting on again?
Amendment number 2, unchanged.
Okay, thank you.
Would the recorder please call the vote?
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative Rowe.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Yes. With 6 yeas and 1 nay, amendment number 2 passes. Seeing as we only have 5 more minutes left of this committee, and there are still several amendments left, I'm going to set this bill aside, and we will take it up at another time. My apologies to Representative Rauscher and the public for anticipation of House Bill 82. That concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Wednesday, March 8th at 1 p.m. and bring up House Bill 82 as well as House Bill 28. By Representative Wright, we will be taking public testimony in House Bill 28 as well. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 2:56 p.m.